The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 10th of May, 2021. On the podcast today, Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals, discusses their second iron ore shipment and also provides an operational update from their Emapa iron ore project. Plus, Bill Brodie-Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals, talks about their initial results from the maiden drilling program at their Hancock iron ore project in Western Australia. And Philip Hayden Slater, non-executive chairman of Riverfort Global Opportunities, explains why they've invested in a cybersecurity company called Smart Tech 247. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs. By the way, you can see lots of articles and these lists on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk. In fact, there's an article there on Cadence Minerals. There's one on Union Jack Oil. There's one on Polarian. Good news from them. Zach's Traders Cafe interview with Guy Mayer, CEO of Catena Innovation. And of course, also, I also like to check out our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser there today is Tech Capital, up 8.55% to 16.5. Biggest faller, Dev Clever Holdings, down to over 10% at 25.25. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals, KDNC. Ticker there. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
A pleasure as always, Justin.
Yeah, and you must be quite pleased because things are progressing there at Emapa. You've done a second iron ore shipment. You've also done an operation update today on the RNS, and we'll dig into that. But as always, it's not just about Emapa, even though that's very significant part of the company there. Just give us a brief summary as to what Cadence is all about, if you could, Kieran.
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. So Cadence is an investing company that invests in minerals that are going to be utilised in the electrification of vehicles and the coming infrastructure boom that we're seeing around the world. So not only do we have this potential investment in Emapa, we have a significant stake in European Metals Holdings, which is one of the largest lithium deposits, hard rock lithium deposits in the world. And we also have a 30% joint venture on one of the areas of Bacchanora Minerals, which recently, last week, has a potential takeover from Ganfeng Lithium. So yeah, across the board, you know, we're involved in lithium, rare earth metals, and iron ore.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get into this, just give a little bit of a backstory on Emapa itself, if you could, and where it's at and how you came to be involved here and what you're doing with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Emapa was a historic Anglo-American asset. They had it valued on their books when they sold it at around 100% for around $600 million. Mm-hmm. It went into JRP because of JRP is like effectively an insolvency process. Mm-hmm. In 2015, because the port collapsed and therefore they couldn't ship the material, and we had very low iron ore prices as well. Mm-hmm. So we got involved over the last 2 years to take it out of that process and revitalize it through investment. And we saw the value in an asset that had effectively was highly de-risked as soon as we got past the legal points, the legal issue. So we got past the JRP, which was approved in 2019. It's been slower than expected progress, but nonetheless progress. And we're now at that stage, we're accelerating progress where we're starting production from the stockpiles. We will vest our 20% once we get a final settlement agreement with the banks, the secure bank creditors, which at the moment we're all aligned as to get that done. Principal terms have been agreed. Unfortunately, COVID is causing some delays from two of the banks, which are based in India. So it is progressing well. And, you know, once we get our 20%, then which we will get for $2.5 million, which we already raised and it's already in escrow. Then the next tranche is for $3.5 million, and that gets us to 27%. of this, this asset that was valued at $600 million, and we have a first right of refusal to go to 49% should Indosino, our JV partners, want to raise further capital.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, and so tell us about this second shipping, of iron ore, if you could. What's happening? How much is it? How much have you shipped, and what's happening with the money?
Right, so in essence, the shipment of this iron ore is there's a stockpile of, now below 1.39 million tonnes of material of iron ore, and that is going to be utilised, it's going to be shipped, and it's being utilised as per a court order, firstly to pay the small creditors and the employees, which we've deposited 7.5 million reais into the judicial account, so that now KPMG, who are the administrators, will pay that out to those people, which is a really, it's really excellent progress, because, it has been since 2015 that some of these people have been waiting for money, and it's only been, through the really hard work across, everyone who's been involved in this project to get that done. The remainder of the net funds from that first shipment is going to be utilised as per the programme, which is effectively to carry out the studies, which we need to start looking at scoping studies, and also to sort of start getting the licences reinstated, which is really important to get this operational. So that was from the first shipment. We've now carried out the second shipment. That second shipment was done in record time for this port, within 60 hours. So the ship arrived, and it was fully loaded with 48,000 tonnes worth of wet tonnes of material within 60 hours, and was off the way. Now, that really bodes well for the, we want to accelerate that and get more ships, rather than at the moment we're doing about one a month, trying to get more ships a month to really take advantage of the incredibly high prices for 58% Fe iron ore at the moment. So, this money is being utilised to reinvest in the asset, pay some small creditors, and move this asset forward. And it's great to be able to say that actually, once we get the bank settlement done and we are vested, we will have invested in a profitable asset, because as it's shipping this material, it is profitable, and it should be profitable, barring any major changes in iron prices, all the way through to the end of mine life in 14 to 15 years.
Wow, yeah. And so the next bit is what? The next bit of this, I see you're trying to up the amount of shipments. Are we likely to see another one soon, or what's going on there?
Yeah, so look, we're at the moment doing about one a month, and then we're going to try and improve that over the coming months. That's what we're saying in the RNS, and that's what we're going to do. And that might be including looking at using the second berth, or just that's there as well. But we're just investigating that at the moment, but showing that we can do it efficiently, safely, even in this COVID environment, is really important. So the next steps is to carry on shipping this material. I envisage that by the time, because there was a cap on it about net $10 million, by the time we hit that net $10 million, we would have reached an agreement with the banks. And then we'll just carry on shipping this material for between, at the slow end, I would say 18 months, at the fast end, 12 months, or 48 to 12 months, actually, two to one years, shipping that material. And that material will then get utilized to, in part to reinvest into the asset, recommission the asset. And then over the next coming 2 years, we would complete studies, recommission the asset, which includes recommissioning the port, railway, and the plant, and bring it into production, which in that case, it would be doing about 5.3 million tonnes of 65%, majority, 90% of it, 65% iron ore, which is high-grade iron ore, and the one that, attracts the premium at this point in time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, you said it's running a little bit slow, as you could expect during the pandemic, but you're quite happy that everything's on track?
Yeah, as soon as we started and got this permission to move the material, we've actually been going ahead of schedule and within budget. So things are going faster than expected in terms of this part of it, which is getting the shipment moving. And, I've always said that we get about 1 to 1.5 per month in terms of shipments. Let's see if we can improve on that. But that's a target. And so let's see if we can improve on that. And, at the moment, we're doing about one a month. So let's ramp this up. It's going well as far as the shipping's going. In terms of operations, that's also going well as well.
Yeah, yeah. And, iron ore prices, they're not going to soften in the short term, are they?
No, certainly not in the short term. I can see, you know, I can see some fundamental drivers there. Because let's look at what Biden is doing in America. If we look at the infrastructure required there and the stimulus that they're going to be injecting there, which is a lot to do with infrastructure, and America has got some pretty poor infrastructure, if anyone's flown through there. So that is going to stimulate iron ore, you know, the use of iron ore. And China is still, of course, utilizing, you know, expanding. Whether we are in a super cycle, well, that's for someone who's far more educated than me and knows far more about commodities than I do. But certainly in the short term, we see, you know, a bullish iron ore price for all the materials. And we'll see how it goes over the next 2 years. But, you know, we want to capitalize on this and ship as much as possible in this space of time where the iron ore is at this strength.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see specifically you've got demand side and then supply side. Brazil is slightly curtailed. Australia is slightly curtailed. There's about a 2 year gap before these come. It's not switching on and off a light bulb, as many people say. It requires ramp up. It requires investment. And, you know, Brazil's had the two dam disasters, which is, you know, they've got to refurbish a lot of their dams. So these things are going to curtail Brazilian production. And Australia's got about 2 years of before it fully ramps up. So assuming demand stays there, I think we should have a fairly bullish environment for iron ore for the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, as always then, Kieran, three reasons. If someone's liking the sound of this and but not yet following the story, three reasons why they've hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, absolutely. The first reason is a mapper. We have an incredible opportunity to take a significant stake in a project that were, you know, for effectively $6 million to take 27% stake in this asset when it was historically valued at $600 million by Anglo American. That's incredible value. Two, we are exposed to some excellent projects in relation to the electric vehicle market, both at EMH and Bacanora Minerals and Hastings Rare Earth Minerals. And thirdly, one approach that we've always taken with investing is we try to de-risk our investment through capital structure, through our technical know-how. And so far today, all the projects that we've vested in and have kept in our portfolio have been technically successful and are bearing out to be commercially successful, as we're seeing with Bacanora.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Kieran, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. UFO is the ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, nice to catch up. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm all good, thanks. I mean, we've been talking about iron ore. We'll get into iron ore in a bit and what's happening with the price and why it's rising. But you've received initial results from the maiden drilling program on your Hancock iron ore project, which is part of the Hamsey iron ore project in Western Australia. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But before we do, Bill, for people not familiar maybe with UFO, explain what Alien Metals is all about, please, if you could.
Well, we're a project developer in the resource sector. We're fortunate to currently have our main projects in sort of tier one mining jurisdictions, Mexico and Australia. Our main commodities that we sort of have projects in are silver, copper, iron ore, and also more recently with the Elizabeth Hill project. Again, there's more copper potential, but there's also now nickel and significantly platinum group elements, platinum, palladium. So, yeah, we're very, very, very excited and sort of working hard now, exploring and adding value to these projects.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, take us through then these initial results. How have they come out? What they're looking like?
Yeah, well, we managed to get our maiden drilling program on the Hancock tenement, which is one of the two tenements in our Hammersley iron ore project in the Pilbara. We sort of fast-tracked that beginning of the year, managed to get that achieved in quite a difficult field conditions, sort of cyclone season, pretty hot, but the team did fantastically as we were keen to advance the project. However, with the huge amount of work going on in the region, the laboratories are so sort of overrun. We were at a point where we were still waiting, and we still are waiting for sort of final over 50% of the results. However, we felt important to update the market and our investors about, you know, the initial results. Mm-hmm. So the initial results, extremely encouraging. We had a great DSO intersection on specifically hole six, which is on one of the sort of series of ridges that we identified from recent field sort of reconnaissance work at the end of last year. That was over 20 meters at 60 plus percent, essentially from surface. One of these sort of layer, one of these beds, significant mineral iron ore beds as part of the geological formation that that exists in this, in the Hancock tenement. Also, several other significant thicknesses of banded iron formation, which is the mineralized iron ore material, on other ridges in other locations, adding to our the potential of the project. Frustratingly, you know, the majority of the results are waiting for are from the what we would feel would be the more exciting geological holes from that program. Also, we managed to do some initial drilling on the Sirius extension prospect, which is, as it, you know, in its name, is the extension of the Sirius deposit held by Brockman Mining up in the sort of northeastern corner of our tenement, which again has we believe will be significant DSO material. So those holes results are awaited still. However, we're you know, we're really encouraged by maiden drilling programs are always challenging in terms of understanding the ground, the conditions, you know, exactly where everything is. I mean, you can look on a map and say, right, drill there, and there's, that's where it will be. But physically on the ground, sometimes it can be, you know, a few meters or tens of meters away. And I think one of the big things we've taken away from this is, as well, so far, is a better understanding of the more significant banded iron beds, the potential as well, the continuation of these beds. So yeah, it's really encouraging, and we're working hard now. I'm trying to take advantage of possibly an opportunity of going in and doing a second phase in a very short space of time. Optimum field season now up there. There's possibly availability of a machine. And so maybe we're going to just push ahead, especially as you mentioned earlier, with the, you know, with the growth in iron ore price and demand is sort of on a daily basis increasing. So we need to sort of, you know, continue the work we're doing, you know, keep a pace with what's happening.
Yeah. And explain, you know, where is the price and why is it rising, Bill?
Well, I mean, you know, commodity prices rise essentially on due to demand. And I think, I mean, I, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but obviously the quality of the material coming out of the Pilbara has always been pretty much the top of the tree. The DSO specifically, but even the lower grade material is still coveted by all the mills, especially the Chinese. And I think there's still some issues coming from sort of the main supply competitors, probably Brazil, where their supply chain's probably not as efficient as the West Australian system at the moment. So, it's fantastic. And there is demand. I mean, the world is coming out, hopefully, of this sort of terrible pandemic. And now everyone's trying to get back on track. So there's sort of a catch-up. Steel is going to be required, you know, more and more for new building projects and development. Iron is in demand.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to have this, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but you get often get different economies, you know, going at different speeds. But because we're all locked down at the same time and we're all opening back up pretty much roughly at the same time, it could be a case where we're all expanding and growing at exactly the same time, couldn't it, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's we'll have to see what comes out. And it's quite a, I suppose, for all of us, quite a unique experience we've been through and still have to get through the other side. But I think the other thing significantly on our projects is they have the potential, like some of the peer companies working in WA already in Western Australia, that, you know, with this surface material, surface DSO, so close to access to infrastructure, be it rail or be it road, there's always that opportunity that we going forward, you know, if we can identify significant sufficient material that you know, passes muster, we can start doing what some of our peers like Fenix and Strike Resources in Western Australia are doing, and you know, becoming a small producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Cool. Okay, Bill. So three reasons. If someone's liking the sound of what you're doing here, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, Jason. I think, again, from the very start, the commodities that Alien core commodities, you have silver, which is again on the rise, over $27 an ounce now. Copper, I think, has just peaked $10,300 a ton, one of the highest prices ever. Iron ore, as we've just been discussing. The jurisdictions we're in with teams in both places, you know, I'd like to think great teams as well. And that's probably the third thing, you know, the people of Alien, you know, the aliens per se, you know, great board, and we're building a technical team as we can, and I think adding a great team and adding value to all the projects.
Yeah, marvelous stuff, Bill. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Justin. Nice to catch up. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Philip Hayden Slater, non-executive chairman of Riverfort Global Opportunities, RGO, is ticker there. Philip, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, so we're just talking about you know, the expansion, the opening up of the economy, and the watch list. And you're in Portugal, so it's going to get very popular down there with you. You're going to have a lot of Brits coming over to see you in a bit, Philip, I think.
We will be welcoming the Brits with open arms, Justin. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I'd pre-booked that now because the prices go through the roof. But
Trust me, the prices have gone up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you've announced investment in Smart Tech 247 and are placing today. So we'll discuss that in a bit. But as always, Philip, for people not familiar with Riverfort Global Opportunities, just give us a brief summary as to what the company's all about, please.
Sure. We are an investment company, and we have been specializing in sort of structured finance products to help smaller listed companies either bridge or develop various projects, whether it's, you know, to a placement or to make an acquisition. And so that's been the bulk of our business. Just recently, we've been pivoting towards more sort of pre-IPO equity type structures where we will help the company go to market. Mm-hmm. And that's the case with both Pluto, which the investment we made a couple of months ago, and literally over the weekend, Smart Tech 24/7.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, let's talk about that because you raised some money to invest in Smart Tech, and it's in the cybersecurity space. And already, Dev, I do a sort of a podcast in the morning where I look at five macro issues, and one of those issues today was a big cyber attack on the Colonial Pipeline in America. 2.5 million barrels a day. It's still having problems. 45% of the East Coast supply of diesel, gasoline, jet fuel was completely knocked offline by a cyber criminal gang on Friday, and they're still working to get it back online. So it's a massive issue, isn't it, cybersecurity?
Totally. Totally, totally. And this, we're very excited about this investment in Smart Tech. I mean, as you said, it's very topical. The attack on the Colonial Pipeline was a ransomware attack. And one of the things that Smart Tech 24/7 does is protect companies and help neutralize ransomware attacks along with the other cybersecurity offerings they make. I mean, it was an enterprise company basically dedicated to monitoring and protecting various businesses and winning against competition like IBM for contracts like cancer research, etc., which was very competitive. Mm. I'm really excited about this company. I mean, the cyber industry is going to grow dramatically over the next few years, and I can't see any business not wanting to protect themselves against these kind of attacks.
Yeah. So where's it based? It's
based in Ireland, or based in Dublin, but they have offices all through Europe and one in the States. The business it generates just under 5 million euros of revenue and just under 1 million euros of EBITDA. And the team there is incredibly professional and driven by the CEO, a chap called Ronan Murphy, and he's just driven, absolutely driven. And you've got to listen to the guy, and maybe we should have a podcast with him. But he is incredibly, just believing that the business is going to drive forward with the demand and the requirement for people to be protected against cyber attacks and hacking.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, it's not going to get any smaller, the problem. As we've all migrate everything now online, especially the pandemic has speeded that up, and it's only going one way, isn't it? And so as we become more reliant online, of course, bigger opportunity for criminals, you know?
Correct. And one of the exciting things about this company is that they're transitioning from not just enterprise, but also to cloud-based security products. So that obviously opens up the market to a much larger degree. Mm. And so their offering can be effectively go viral in terms of the kind of customers that they can then cater for. Yeah. So, the attack on Clonal Pipeline is just another example of how, and this is in America, how these companies have left themselves unprotected and opened back doors for criminal gangs to come in and extract both information and obviously money. Now, it's not just businesses that need protected, but governments obviously as well, and government departments which need to be protected. So every year going forward, there's going to be more dollars spent on cyber protection than the year before. So it's really exciting from that point of view.
Yeah. So, and are you always looking for investments in hot areas? At one point you say that's enough now, or are you always looking?
No, we're always looking. I mean, this is on top of an acquisition, or rather an investment we made in something called Pluto, which is a crypto-based platform, which not just invests in cryptocurrencies, but helps projects and developers develop specific protocols that people can use and invest in. And that has done extremely well. So, I think both of those investments could possibly be worth the market cap of Riverford Global Opportunities in the not too distant future. So, I think we're sort of just literally making people aware that this is the sort of investment we're trying to make. We're looking at deals every day, and there's a pipeline of stuff that we have to look at and decide whether it fits our sort of our mandate in terms of technology investment.
Yeah.
And that's on top of the normal business of just providing structured finance to small listed companies to generate nice returns, which has been the business previously.
And the thing with crypto, and again, we all know that decentralized finance and all that is going to be a big area. I mean, the issue is at the moment, it's such a hot area. A lot of people are jumping on it. There's so many crypto coins out there, and you need people who know about this space to invest in the right vehicles. It's like the internet boom, isn't it, of 2000, where there's so many companies just change their name to .com, where most of them will not survive, but the ones that do, they will grab the market share, you know?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, look, the guys at Pluto, they sort of live and breathe this stuff. And it's not just the understanding the likelihood of which coin is going to be popular, but getting in with the developers and the projects at a very early stage and backing them and then financing them as well, and then helping them in terms of where they should be positioning themselves. So the thing about Pluto is it's actually backed by real assets. Again, that is working its way through to the Aquis market, and it's incredibly exciting. So we're looking for other opportunities like that where, you know, normal investors just don't get access to. So we're actually a bit unique in that respect. So in the normal investment community can't get access to these structured products that we're doing, and they can't get access to this kind of pre-IPO investments we're looking at. So that's really the thrust of the market. So we're looking to provide a strategy for our shareholders where we will protect them in a down market by having, obviously, you know, greater demand for the structured product side. And hot markets like we currently have, we'll take advantage of our capital to invest in companies that will likely grow and get good valuations in an IPO situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Philip, as always, if someone's liking the sound of what you're doing here but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so we have underlying profitability with the structured products, and we're paying a dividend. It's currently, I think now, around about 3.5%. Don't hold me to that, but something like that. So we're profitable and we're paying a dividend. That's the first one. The second one is you're getting access to all these, the exposure of all these underlying structured products and the profitability that will result in. And then the very exciting pivot to this pre-IPO market, where we have the ability to invest at an early stage for these companies, which will hopefully produce multiple returns for our shareholders.
Marvellous stuff. Philip, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Many thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Shield Therapeutics, up 9.38% to 52.5. At four, Turn, and that's up 21% to 18.1. At three, Blue Star Capital, up 3% to 0.175. At two, Plarium, hit an all-time high there, hit the pound a day, actually, up 7% to 19.5 at the moment. And at one, Deep Verge, up 3% to 34.25. Okay, it's time for top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Oriole Resources, Bibembi, Gold Project Update, Bibemi, I don't know how to say that. At four, Powerhouse Energy, Exclusivity Agreement, Technology in Greece and Hungary. At three, Plarium Imaging, New System Order. At two, Open Orphan, 3 million COVID Challenge Virus Manufacturing Contract. And at one, Avacta, it's the SARS-CoV-2 Antigen Lateral Flow Test Update. Check those lists out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.